Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
One more page, Stacks and Jacks. Now tomorrow, Ricardo on the board, SP Futures down $1.50. Nasdaq Futures down 10, so not much going on this morning after second down day in a row. When I say not much going on, we have worldwide outages and all over the place. Australia, the whole Southeast Asia, and some stuff here. I guess it comes back to this CrowdStrike outfit, but good thing we have Kevin and Carl on today, because I don't know anything about this stuff. Those guys allegedly do. We'll see if they do. Do we have Kevin?
No, I'm offline thanks to CrowdStrike.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I was wondering if I tried to get into my IB system this morning, and I think it must have been a fat finger on my part. I'm going, oh, no, what if I can't get into my IB? But it's second time I went through, so everything's cool here as well, Kevin.
CrowdStrike is the outfit that went out and said the DNC server hack in 2016 was a Russian hack. And then later, under questioning, under oath, said, well, yeah, we really never looked at the server.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, they're a reputable outfit.
Well, they're huge.
I mean, they're well known. They do have a reputation, but as far as I'm concerned, they're on the poop list.
Well, they seem to have what is it saying here? This is by an article by Ryan Brown. Issues were caused by a defect found in a single content update for Windows hosts. So these guys do cybersecurity for people, correct?
Correct.
And
so they have threat detection systems, and then they do evaluations, penetration testing. They will do cleanup after a breach, those kinds of things.
And Microsoft had one of their own kind of almost simultaneously yesterday morning, right? So they had a problem with some of their stuff. At the same time, these guys had a problem with theirs.
Yeah, and you know, my reading on it so far is cursory. So I do want to admonish that I haven't had a whole lot to look into here. But hearing it on the news this morning, I said, well, I better look at least a little bit, because you're going to want to talk about it.
It says the issues were caused by a defect found in a single content update for Windows hosts. This is not a security incident or a cyber attack. The issue has been identified, isolated, and a fix has been deployed. So we're good to go.
Well, here's the thing, is if it knocks your business offline, how much money do they owe you?
Well,
you know, if you lose, say you're an airline and you have to cancel a whole bunch of flights, what's that cost you, and how much money, you know, how much money they owe you?
Well, yeah, good luck with that.
Somewhere between nothing and
something.
The worst case scenario is what you paid them for the service. Everybody's contracts say that they are not responsible for any consequential damages. This is something that most people don't, when they evaluate a contract, don't take notice of it, and it's a big deal. I don't expect, so it, basically what it says is, if we cause harm to your business, sorry, we're not paying for that. You can only recover the cost of what you paid us because we didn't perform the service properly. It's pretty standard, and I never expected a company to have an open checkbook like that, because that, you know, would be like taking on more risk than I'd ever be comfortable doing. However, I always ask that they put a clause in there that said, as long as they follow industry standards for testing and deploying software changes or whatever kinds of changes to the environment. And they'll always balk at that, which is fine. I expected them to balk at it and say, well, you know, industry standard is a pretty nebulous issue. I don't think there's, you know, a 100% agreement on what that means. And so then that was perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. So I could say, do you have rules and standards, policies and procedures about testing, adequately testing your software changes before you deploy them, and then how, what your deployment process is? And they will say, oh yeah, of course we do. We would not be diligent if we didn't. I said, how about if we say you just have to follow your own? And that's pretty hard for them to deny. So that's the approach to take on it. Now, does that mean you can ever prove that they didn't follow it? Because you could follow all the rules properly and something still goes wrong. Stuff happens. I get that. And so I'm just asking for diligence in terms of how they go about doing it. I don't want someone to just willy-nilly throw a change in there. Oh, there's a security issue. Here, just throw this five lines of code in there and it'll fix it all. Deploy it. And it hasn't been adequately tested. So, you know, you want, you know, for our listeners out there, you want to see if you can get whatever kind of protection. If you can't prove it, you can't prove it. There's virtually no way to prove it unless there's internal company documentation that you can subpoena. However, you do give them the awareness that they are responsible for more than just a little bit of damage on it. And that's ultimately what you want, especially if enough people get that kind of concession, then they really, really have to be, you know, as they evaluate their own risk, have to say, well, that's a pretty big risk. We better be very diligent about how we go about making changes.
Well, it's kind of
anyway, that's the long-winded answer to a simple question.
Well, that's all right. This is all happening sort of at the same time. Microsoft, which also reported issues affecting its Azure cloud service and Microsoft 365 suite of apps fell 1.8%. Microsoft is down, by the way, CrowdStrike down $41, so that's a 12%. A multitude of different websites went down Friday morning as planes were grounded and TV studios paused broadcasting amid an ongoing major IT outage. Earlier on Friday, CrowdStrike was hit with a major outage caused by an issue with an update affecting its Falcon sensor product, whatever that is, which is designed to stop cyber breaches using cloud technology. CrowdStrike is now in the process of rolling back the update globally. Okay.
Yep. There you have it.
Cybersecurity experts said the update issue
explains everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, CrowdStrike was responsible for directly affecting Windows systems around the world, with laptops showing an error screen known as the blue screen of death. I remember those.
It's always been, that's a long-standing term in the business. That's almost as old as Microsoft operating systems.
Yeah, the my question is, there was a book that, of course, all the time we've been on the show here, I'm trying to remember the name of the book and I can't. It was a Tom Clancy book. You know, he always had these interesting things he wrote about. Well, one of the books was, and the reason why I remember this one is because I read it long before 9/11. And it had to do with essentially a potential war between the U.S. and Japan, and I cannot for the life of me. Ricardo, how about helping me out and looking at the Tom Clancy books and the one I'm talking about here? And the Japanese started a war with the U.S. And you might say, why the hell would they do something like that, and how could they begin to... Somehow or another, they just wanted, like they did before, to just get a bigger influence in the Pacific region. Which now I think you could probably insert the name China there instead of Japan, right?
There was a time in the 80s and into the, into the 90s when Japan had made so many inroads into U.S. markets and hadn't spent themselves into oblivion yet. And the old joke was the Cold War ended and Japan won.
Yeah, well, what they did was, for people close to home in the markets, they injected some big mess up into the computer systems everywhere. And they also screwed up the New York Stock Exchange to a certain extent. Then they sold the living bejesus out of the market. And they shorted everything, and the thing went down like, you know, 50% or something. So they made like all this dough, blew everybody else out, and now had, by doing these computer glitches, and while the Navy had some computer glitches, they had They sunk an aircraft. They did a bunch of stuff. And
is Living Bejesus, is that one of those?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Stock trader technical terms.
Yeah, yeah, it means a lot. You know, kind of a lot, kind of a real lot. So anyway, the thing goes on, and everything ends up being resurrected. And who's the hero in the book? He ended up starting the New York Stock Exchange before the crash happened. At those prices, and.
Are you thinking of Debt of Honor?
Yeah.
Is that the book?
Yeah, I think so. But the scary part, Kevin, was there was this Japanese pilot, a 747 pilot, just a regular guy, and he was flying 747 over his brother's. It was his brother's. He was a captain of a destroyer, just as the U.S. blew the destroyer out of the water or something. So he watched the U.S. basically kill a member of his family, and then something else happened to another member of the family. So he's pissed off. So what do you think he does? He has this old 747 gassed up at Kennedy, and because he has such seniority, he says, I'm going to take this thing. I've got clearance to take this to the boneyard or someplace. And they kind of looked at him weird, but he goes, yeah, just gas it up. We got to fly it out to Arizona. We're going to plunk it in the boneyard or something. Well, he doesn't go to Arizona. He runs into Congress while the State of the Union's going on or something like that. So it was the absolute how-to for 9/11. As soon as 9/11 happened, I go, those bleeps read this book. It absolutely was a how-to to do exactly what they did. And that's why I remember the book so much. but they started. Now the question is, if somebody, God forbid, the Chinese or someplace, wanted to do something, say in Taiwan or someplace, would the first thing they would do is screw up all the computer systems here where nobody could talk to anybody, including the army?
Oh, they would do everything they could. You also want to knock out, do whatever you can to take out satellite systems. I mean, if you really, really wanted to, make it happen, of course, yeah, knock out communications first.
Is the system that fragile? I guess is my question. Maybe it's more a Carl question, but seems like it's all connected here.
I'm sure there's a lot of redundancy. Well, I'm not sure, but I tell you what, if I were the designer, because we design networks this way, you build in as many redundancies as you possibly can.
Well, tell that to the grounded planes in Australia today. Just saying.
That's a good point. I can't argue with you on that. The whole idea, it's not like I haven't taught anything that had to do with network design this summer. We talk about redundancies all the time, but redundancy for your business, like if you're an online retailer or something, your redundancies for there versus the redundancies you need for national defense, of course, are going to be different stories.
One would hope. One would surely hope.
Well, and because, my true, expertise, my expertise on networks and cyber, a little more on cybersecurity, but it is pretty much at an overview level at this point in my life. I'm not the guy to be talking about that. I bet you Carl's going to have something to offer on.
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit of. I saw the baseball draft. I didn't check it out much. I still am sort of stunned that these guys we still have this draft for baseball going that deep, and we have, and these guys still have this antitrust exemption. I can't believe, out of all the screw ups the Supreme Court has made, that they don't fix. Did they ever fix anything? I mean, on their own? I don't think it's set up that way, is it?
Well, the Supreme Court can't fix anything on their own. Someone withstanding has to bring a lawsuit. And the lawsuit has to work its way through the lower courts before it gets to them.
All right.
So they just can't say, oh, today we're going to bump the antitrust exemption. Someone's got to challenge it.
Well, I can't believe nobody did all along the line. I mean, all the way through the labor things and everything else.
Yeah, but that's a different issue. The Supreme Court's job is not to fix things.
Obviously. What do you make of the Biden move to make some changes there?
Well, which changes are we discussing here?
Well, the rumor has been, although I haven't really seen anything in paper, I'm listening to the radio, is that the term limits and something. I don't know if it's more people or not, but term limits at least.
Well, look at it this way. What can you expect? Let's just say, you know, whether Biden drops out of the race or not, but assuming he's toast, you are going to see a scramble to get every last wish list item jammed through somehow, some way. Now, he's got, you know, he doesn't have a majority in the House, so, you know, it would have to be mostly by executive order. And I don't know that there's that much damage. There's plenty of damage you can do by executive order, but I don't know at this point that there's much that he can do that can't be undone pretty quickly. But, you know, they'll take the approach that, well, you know, if we give them, you know, 300 things, maybe they'll only get 200 of them.
Well, I mean, I guess the...
defeat 200.
But I've not... This is not... Just because he came out with the plan, it's not the job of somebody on the right just to disagree with it, because I've heard it from people on the right, too. What are these guys still doing in office all these years?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know how I feel about, you know, running the country by executive order.
No, I'm talking about... I got to believe that that would be some type of an amendment, wouldn't it?
What kind of an amendment?
Give me
a specific item here.
Well, is a Supreme Court lifetime appointment, is that in the Constitution or not? I don't know.
I don't know.
Or is that just how it worked out that way somewhere? I mean, this Clarence Thomas is causing a lot of problems with every revelation. I mean, the guy he's something, isn't he?
What has he done from a judicial standpoint?
Well, nobody knows.
That's objectionable.
Nobody knows.
Well, then what's the problem?
You
probably ought to know before you're ready to say he's a big problem.
He's a big problem because he doesn't seem to have any ethics in regards to taking money from people. And we talk on the show all the time.
And you think that's just Clarence Thomas, huh?
Whatever investigation
you
went through.
You don't think that was, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
There was a list. It's around somewhere. I can find it. I thought I sent it to you guys. It was a list of... every gift that anybody's gotten over the last, like, 40 years. And some people have taken 4 and 5, and some people have taken 1. He's got, like, 100. He's got more gifts than all the rest of the people combined he's ever been on the board, on the thing with.
Okay, and I don't think they should be taking anything. And, you're not getting an argument from me. So now you're just, but what you are doing is you're arguing over the degree of compromise.
Well, yeah, but it is. There's always a degree, Kevin, and I don't know.
It's the old thing. Now we know what you are. We're just negotiating the price.
I'm going to say that every single person who ever went to a ball game with somebody isn't compromised. I'm going to say that the people who came to the CBOE, Democrat and Republican, back when the price for a visit was $500. And they flew to Chicago. I can't believe that the 500 compromised anybody. Now, if all of a sudden the CBO went and got the guy in a private jet and set him up at the Conrad Hilton penthouse and got him a hooker, I think maybe we're over the top. Now, where that line is, you know, I think you and I, neither one of us really knows, but I think the $500 is probably okay. You know, and if somebody wanted to take, you know, lob a drink over Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I hope she's not compromised by that. You know, now if it's...
Depends on how badly she needs the drink.
Well, yeah, it depends on if it's a double or not. if it's really good booze. Now, if it's if it's Jim Beam, it's okay. If it's Bullet, not so good, eh?
There you go.
But, I mean, what is the deal? Should it be 20 years? Should it be 15? Should it be 25? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's been forever for a long time. I didn't really have a problem with that, necessarily. I'm not so sure I do now, either. I mean, more people on the show said they want term limits in the Supreme Court than I have.
So, and we're talking term limits in the Supreme Court. Are we going to do this all the way through the judiciary? Because we probably should.
Well, I mean, what do you think the number should be? I mean, I don't think it should be 5. You know, I don't... I have no idea. I mean, it's been talked about for a long time, like everything else. A lot of things are talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, I'm just saying, but I guess it's compromised by the sense that there doesn't appear to be a recusal sort of thing. There doesn't seem to be their own set of what the idea that every judge can decide for himself whether he's compromised on a case. That's a little odd, don't you think? You get to pick your own morality. Who gets to do that?
Oh yeah, because again, that's a both sides issue.
Oh yeah,
and absolutely it is. And so, you know, you always have one side or the other. It doesn't matter which one. You can take your pick. Is calling for a recusal for a judge that, of course, doesn't do it, and then everybody's going to be outraged, and then another case comes along, and everybody on the other side calls for a recusal. As if there were never, you know, as if they were pristine here in the whole issue, and of course they're not. And I think there's some really good discussable items there, Tom. It's just partly, you know, there's places where I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from some people, and that gets to be my problem.
Well, by the way, you're not alone there. He's got a thing from Mike. What about Biden? It's not about Biden. It's about the idea of somebody. Now, I don't know anything about Clinton. What I'm saying is, Kevin, whenever something goes along, somebody somewhere on the right or the left or the middle or from the moon pushes it to the envelope to where it becomes an item. And it appears that Clarence Thomas is doing it here. Now, it certainly appears that Hunter Biden is pushing the envelope on how much you can chase American money overseas. I mean, somebody always brings it up, right? In this particular case...
I think he actually kind of pushed beyond the envelope. Well, that's just me.
I understand that, but I'm saying, you know, there are people I think probably sneakily traded in Congress forever, and all of a sudden Cheney shows up and he says, the hell with all these conventions or these rules, I'm going to do whatever the hell I damn well please. Okay, so the fact that Cheney did that, I don't care if he's a Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian. The fact is, he happened to be a Republican, and he happened to push the envelope, and all of a sudden it became a household conversation. Hey, what exactly are these guys doing out there? Somebody always pushes it, right? I'm just saying.
Yeah, they do. So, you know, so my ethical line gets drawn, you know, pretty early on and at a pretty low level. So we have that. By the way, don't ever talk about this as a Hunter Biden issue. It is a Joe Biden issue.
Oh, yeah, well, whatever.
Hunter was just a family bag man.
It's...
You know, when they... I love how, you know, people talk about, well, you can see just Joe just loves his son.
Well, yeah.
And it's tragic that he had so many issues and all that. And they go, yeah, he loves his son so much that he took his drug-addled son and made him into a criminal bag man. And yes, that's definitely a father's love for a son.
Well, when you start talking about
anyway, side issue.
Yeah, okay, you know, but we're
like to make this a Hunter Biden issue.
Where I'm going with this is for years and years and years, starting with the Civil War, where we put money down there to help the South rebuild, we the North, and guess what? A bunch of losers called carpetbaggers chased all the money down there and stole half of it. Right. So this is not new. I mean, now the question is, how much of the money we send to foreign places, and you and I knew at Notre Dame, people from Nicaragua, and guess what? Nicaragua sucks as bad as it did when we were sending the money down there. The guy's family's still in trouble. So, I mean, who are these people all over the place that chase our money, grab half of it, and it never goes to where it's supposed to be? I mean, I see the mayor here. I see, the Obama administration. I see people on the right. Everybody's bitching and moaning about the millions of dollars we're doing for the people from the immigration, illegal, legal, whatever. Kevin, I don't see the guys near me getting a dime from anybody. Where is that money going between somebody writing a check and if you were to stop on Elston Avenue and say, when's the last time you got a dime from somebody? They go, what are you talking about? I mean, where is it all going? I guess is my question. This is a universal question. This is not a right or left question.
Yeah, it's a really good universal question. And in that particular case, I would follow to the non-government organizations that get hired to shepherd these people. And by the way, you saw one of the larger ones that's responsible for taking care of children. just had charges filed for widespread sexual abuse of children.
Wow.
These are people that, you know, get to one of those inner circles of hell.
But this is becoming our way of life. Remember we had Katie Ratheran talking about the research being done at Vanderbilt and Northwestern and all these places, and how people pony up money for research, and you get, you know, somebody croaks and they give how much $1 million for research and God knows what, juvenile diabetes or whatever. She was talking about the overhead rates that these hospitals put on the individual projects just to be like in their building and stuff. God's sake, Kevin, we're doing it in our hospitals. Does this become the American way?
Yes, it has. And so your question, and we'll go back to your original question about the, who's benefiting. Well, you know, what's the CEO's salary of some NGO? Who is doing whatever. Whatever they're doing, whether it's, even if they're ethically housing the children and not trafficking in children and not allowing sexual abuse, even if they're doing everything right, who's benefiting? Well, what's the management look like? What's the overhead rate of those non-government organizations? Do we even know? Do we know who they all are? Because they sure as hell don't find their way on a case-by-case basis into the news. We just know on a broad base what's going on there, and every once in a while something flares up. So, you know, yeah, it's just so all damn corrupt.
Why? I don't know how we get there. What did Diane say yesterday at Fisher House? Their overhead is 18%. I'll bet that's about as cheap as anybody. Maybe the food depository. All these other places are half, aren't they? These alleged charitable organizations.
Some of them are very, very, you have to go case by case, but some of them are just, you know, they exist. I'll tell you this, in many cases, this is a broad generalization. Well, no, it's not that broad a generalization, actually. There are a lot of people who are come from generational wealth, and it isn't important necessarily when you are raised with the silver spoon and you get into the good schools and so on. It is not, because you may not be that talented. It is not necessarily important to make a lot of money, but it is important to have a big title. So if you can run a not-for-profit, if you can get a senior-level job in a not-for-profit, you can have the prestige of a big title even though you don't make a lot of money. So some of them exist just to provide a place to park some of our less high achieving or lower achieving rich people.
I get it. I got a story we could bag. SP Futures up 6, SP Futures up 34. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Hal Ricardo on the board. I'm watching here the Sydney airport. Everything delayed, canceled. Not a couple boarding. I guess they had a few going. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 30. We were down, now we are up. Dow Futures down 71. Who's down on the Dow? We got American Express down 5. I don't know if they're part of this outage or not. Amazon down 285. and Microsoft down 5.58% because they have a problem with one of their systems as well, but they're only down one, like not even 1.5%. But CrowdStrike's down, well, they were down 41%, now they're only down 35%, but that's kind of the story of the morning here. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 62%, so let's call that one flat. Hang Seng, no, whack, down 360%, that's over 2%, 17,417. I'm going to say that's the lowest we've seen it in quite a while. Now, Shanghai, again, is doing nothing. It's up like 5, 29.82. These days where Hang Seng moves and has a huge move and mainland doesn't, it, I don't know that much about the Chinese markets, but it seems really odd to me. Europe, DAX down 94.5%, FTSE down 43.5%, CAC around down 36.5%. So they're uniform at down 0.5%. Yesterday, Dow was down 533, giving up most of what they made the day before. They were up 7. So again, how is the Dow doing all this stuff? Stocks in the Dow, some of these real high-priced stocks, if you move $20, that's like 100, and the multiplier is like 6.7. So that's like $135 in one stock in the Dow. So it's a little weird the way it's set up now with these high-priced stocks. S&P down 43. This was yesterday, 0.8%. NASDAQ down 125.7. So it's 2 days in a row NASDAQ was down, but it was down further than that. It came back on the close. So we might actually right the ship here a little today. We'll see. Bonds, 10-year up 3 basis points, 4.21. The bond up 3 basis points, 2.44. Japan unchanged, 1.04. Oil, which has nudged up to the top end of the range again, down 42 cents, 82.40. It's been stuck there for quite a while. Brent down 26 cents, 84.85. Natural gas down 5 cents, 207. Almost ready to go under 2 here. RBOB unchanged, 251. It's been steady as well. Gold down $42, but still, with a week of gains here at 24.13. Silver down 84 cents. That's a big move. That's almost 3%. 29.38 down to where it's kind of been a buy, but who knows this time. Copper down 2 cents, 4.25. We have the foreign exchange. U.S. dollar a little stronger today, 108.8 against the euro and 129.2 against the pound. It was almost 130 yesterday, so dollar a little stronger yesterday. Bitcoin up 470, 64,017. As Janet Yellen says, she's worried about the dollar because Bitcoin is edging in. Well, she's the one who wrecked the dollar, but that's just an editorial comment. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:37 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 61 degrees right now with a high of 76. Mostly sunny and very comfortable throughout the day. Tonight will be clear with a low of 64 degrees. On the Phoenix, 93 degrees right now with a high of 114. Hot with intervals of clouds and sunshine. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. Tonight, a thunderstorm in spots early this evening. Otherwise, partly cloudy and very warm. On the traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe, 17 minutes. Iman Eden from Lane Cook, 36 minutes. 22 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 27 minutes. Lastly, sports. The MLB, no games yesterday, but we have a couple today. Cubs play the Diamondbacks in Wrigley Field, Chicago at 1:20 p.m. And the White Sox play the Royals in Kauffman Stadium, Kansas City at 7:10 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Kevin, didn't they used to have recently... speaking of which, I don't know if you heard yesterday, but we were on the air on Wednesday, and I bleeped up. I said there was nobody who got 100% vote into the Hall of Fame, and I was wrong. Mariano Rivera did it not that long ago. I forgot about
it. He deserved it. And a lot of people have deserved it. But, yeah, Rivera would be certainly an easy choice. He would be an easy yes vote for me.
Yeah. Now, do you think Lou Gehrig got it in the voice acclamation, or somebody mumbled under his breath, no?
Boy, he was a saint by the time he graduated. You know, he had been, not only was he great, but he gave that, that rousing speech.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would imagine that Lou Gehrig, when they said by acclamation, how would you vote against him?
Why did somebody vote against Willie Mays and Babe Ruth? Somebody did.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, somebody always...
Who didn't think Willie Mays was good enough?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... Like I said, there's only one guy that's been in it. There's a lot of people that are 100% by the Veterans Committee and stuff. And from the... There's, like, all kinds of committees now. There's the early Negro Leagues. There's the late Negro Leagues. There's the early veterans, late veterans. There's probably, 6 different ways to get in there. But anyway... didn't recently and after the All-Star game, weren't there like a couple of games on Thursday night just to get everybody back in their baseball fix? Not, and most of the people started on Friday. There weren't any last night, I don't think.
Yeah, there weren't any, so they moved it completely to Friday. You know, no big deal.
No, I just
I didn't miss it.
I seem to recall
a bit. Did you watch any of Trump's speech?
No, I figured I'd dig into it this morning.
I watched a little, but I fell asleep.
You know, I think they've done a nice job.
Didn't watch any of the convention at all.
A little bit. I think they did a nice job. There's been a lot of unity. I mean, there didn't seem to be a lot of issues. I don't know why the guys from Columbus blasted that guy the way they did, but the Ohio cops. But I think Milwaukee did a pretty good job, it seems, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does seem. And it seemed like the kind of my takeaway from it is the Republicans had fun.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be they were the no fun people, and the Democrats would be the fun people. And my goodness, it's kind of the other way around. The Democrats are kind of no fun, pretty dour nowadays, and the Republicans are the fun party.
When I went to the convention here,
a really weird turn of events.
I forget who the hell was nominated. When I went, was it 98? Must have been Clinton. Whatever, I forget, but it was. Everybody's in the stands drinking beers like it's a basketball game, and then the big shots. I was with one of the big shots. You know, we had our law firm had a booth, and then we had a skybox. And I was in a suit, but imagine that. But the rest of the people weren't. I mean, the people sitting in the stands were just, you know, and from the great state of Iowa, everybody gets up from Iowa and cheers. You know, it's like a bar type thing. But everybody's having a good time, it seemed. I mean, to be a delegate, what do you got to do to be a delegate? How do you get on the? I mean, you get elected in, but you just got to be like a regular guy.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to tell you what that requires. I have no idea how one would become a delegate.
But I think they're pretty much regular people. I don't think they're not elected officers. Are they like small town, you know, board members and stuff? Or it must be something like that, I would guess. But I don't know. Somebody might know. Maybe Carl knows because he was involved in that stuff. You mentioned the how people just kind of bump along. Well, there was a guy. When I was at Pullman originally, the chairman was McDivitt, the astronaut. Remember him? Remember the name?
Sure.
I met him a couple times. He seemed like a nice enough guy. I don't know how talented he was running Pullman, but he certainly was ethical and stuff. And then there was another guy. But then somehow the other guy left, and they brought in this. The big bank from Pullman, I don't know why it went back this far, but their lead bank was Mellon Bank out of Philly. Even though there were 10.
Actually, Pittsburgh.
That's right, Pittsburgh.
Might have been dealing with Philly people, but it was based in Pittsburgh.
Well, they were the lead bank somehow. I don't know how that... But Pullman...
Well, Mellon was a pretty big-time bank in its day.
Yeah, but I mean, you would think it would be somebody here, but there were people here that... And everybody was always competing to get the banking business in Pullman. You might ask why. Well, they did a lot of financing overseas for the Import-Export Bank, and our late friend Robin was part of that because they would be putting up, because Kellogg Brown and Root, well, Kellogg was part of Pullman back then, and Kellogg makes, like, refinery, they do the engineering work for, like, refineries in Saudi Arabia and those kinds of places. It's a huge international engineering firm. And what would happen is, the country they were doing it, they didn't have the money, or the banking system to pay the people and put the thing up. So the entire money for the refinery would run through Pullman. So it looked like Pullman had a $100 million project, but in fact, the engineering fees were only like 10. But the other 90 ran through Pullman and the Import Export Bank, and some bank was always involved in that. So. It wasn't that big of a company, but their banking issues were huge. So there were like 10 banks in their lineup, and every one of them was trying to get more of the dough. Because every time somebody gave you a loan in those days, remember, Kevin, you don't remember this to me. Does anybody, I'm going to say, give me a show of hands by the listeners, does anybody even know what a compensating balance is? But in those days, when interest rates was 12%, if your line of credit at, say, First National was 10 mil or 20 mil, you had to keep like $1 million in a checking account there just as an offsetting. So they essentially ate 12% on your $1 million and they kind of hoped you got a loan on top of that, right? But
the other thing was, rather than pay fees, a lot of companies would keep balances as well on top of their compensating balance. which was just a way of saying you're paying a higher interest rate by foregoing interest on your deposit money. You'd also pay for fees with balances. So they would do a whole analysis at the end of the at the end of each month, and say you spent money on this many wire transfer fees and this many, checking items and deposit items and everything that goes into the complex pricing model. And then they would say, well, you'd offset that with something called an earnings credit. The earnings credit then would either cover your fees, or you would get charged, and you would get charged at a higher rate than just the fees if you didn't cover it with balances.
Well, when McDivitt retires and this next guy comes in for like a year, and he was just an interim guy, well, they end up hiring some dude from this Mellon group. I'll leave the guy's name out, but Kevin, if he'd have stabbed the dude, he'd have bled blue, kind of thing. I don't think he was all that talented, but he ends up coming to Pullman, and we ended up having breakfast together later on for a long story, and he was telling me about Pullman. And he was a member of the Chicago Club, which is the snootiest club here in the city. They don't even have athletic facilities. It's over on Van Buren in Michigan.
Yeah, I remember the Chicago Club.
Yeah, and so he takes me over there for breakfast. And me and this place, talk about Curly Howard and whatever. But you don't even tell the guy what you want for breakfast. You got to write it down. It's the weirdest damn thing. Anyway, he told me, Tom, I was here when Pullman was these guys from Wheelbrader Fry, of course he had his contract, he got a big stock option thing, right? These guys, I was here having breakfast, and I get the call. Meaning the kid had to run over and tell him he had a call. There was no cell phones. I get this call. They interrupted my breakfast. I had to go back to the office, and these guys were trying to buy our company, and, we goosed the price on them, and we had to let it go, and which means he made, God knows what. A year later, the dude surfaces as the head of the Federal Reserve in Chicago. Then I get on the Pullman board, and who's on the Pullman board but this guy? He was everywhere. I don't think the guy ever did a day's work in his life, Kevin. I don't know that, but I didn't see any outpeep of talent the 6 years I was on the board with the guy. He could have been a genius behind this. I think what you just said, people have no idea how this works sometimes. One of these days, if I really want to piss myself off, I'll read that book by Geithner, the former New York head of the New York Fed.
You read it and report back. You can read it so I don't have to.
Or every time the kids screwed up in school, the old man, it would make him a Supreme Court clerk that summer just trying to straighten the kid out or something. Going, I guess I would have, I don't think I would have liked to have been in that group. I don't think I would have got along with those guys. They probably didn't play basketball or softball or anything like that. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Squash.
I don't know. Well, do you ever play squash?
No, I'm sure it's a fine game.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, any game is, good enough, but I guess. So what we've had the market, no matter what, the political season here is going to be bizarre. I mean, the Democrats are in total disarray.
Yeah, it's already bizarre.
Yeah, and
it's going to be.
And we had a guy, basically 2 inches away from getting killed last week, so everybody's kind of forgetting that. I'm not forgetting it. I mean, it's unbelievable when you think about it. Now, what if he'd have gotten hit, but he didn't? So now all of a sudden, is he capable? I hope he isn't of screwing himself up by himself between now and November. I don't know. He seems to me like he might be. I hope he doesn't. But when I say screwing himself up, just talking his way out of everybody voting for him, because right now it looks to me like he's kind of in. I don't know who the hell the Democrats are going to come up with, because it looks like this guy's out.
I think they're kind of stuck on the Kamala Harris.
Oh, they must know that's a problem. They got to know that's a problem.
It's a problem no matter what they do. They've invested so much into identity politics that they really, are going to have a hard time kicking the woman of color to the curb.
Well, that's, I think, why.
So they want to see. They're trying to get enough time to at least create the image, the illusion of some kind of fair competition, so that she can lose.
Well, I think that's why Mike Quigley.
The problem is, there was a poll out yesterday, and it was, you know, polls are worth whatever they're worth, but everybody associated with the Obama administration now is it just has a very unfavorable opinion. So that's not just Obama; he's the worst of them in terms of public opinion at this point. But you know. Harris, Buttigieg, you know, even Gavin Newsom, because he's been such a staunch and, you know, such a vocal supporter of Biden, it's none of them. None of them have any popularity. Even people like Gretchen Whitmer, who I think is just horrible, the governor over here, even, you know, someone like her polls better than the rest of them.
It's kind of a bleep storm when there's no center you can go to or anything like that. I don't know. I think that's why Mike Quigley.
Well, who's leadership? Who do they have for leadership in their caucuses?
Well, I mean,
Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi.
Well, but Schumer wants no part of it. I mean, plus Nancy's got
no chance. No, that's what I mean. They haven't cultivated any young leaders in their party, and so they're kind of screwed.
Well, I think what Mike Quigley was trying to do 2 weeks ago when he. Was the first Mike Quigley is the representative here from Chicago, and the north maybe a couple of north suburbs. He basically wanted 2-3 weeks ago for Obama to get out, Biden to get out early, so they could cobble together somewhat of a national primary. And some people who, I think he thinks there are people with talent there, get a chance to show their face and do something and maybe win. And I don't. Every day that ticks by, I don't see how that can happen.
I agree with you. I don't know how they, you know, I don't know how they could pull that off.
I mean, I think 3 weeks ago maybe they could have, but I don't see how.
Even then, it would have been iffy. I mean, you know.
But it would have. I mean, his point was
you got a party that has to reorient itself because everybody involved, anybody who would be involved, was only a matter of weeks ago standing up and saying, "Well, Joe Biden is sharp," and he's everybody's got to answer for that. That's a big problem for everybody was part of the cover up.
Well,
and now they say, "Oh, but you know, trust me."
I think that Kevin, he didn't do a bad job at the State of the Union. He wasn't perfect, but he did. I was surprised that he did as good as he did. Now,
it may have been a surprise that he did as well as he did, but I don't think he was good.
Oh, okay, but
he
you're
was just angry and
there is. Some of my best friends, there's not the guy could come out and hand you a $500 bill and you'd bitch that he'd give you $1,000. I mean, there's people that whatever is, but my point is there's somewhat of a the guy always had problems talking. Didn't he stutter or something? I'm just trying to state facts here. I'm not a fan of the dude, you know that. But someplace somewhere, your ability to dance around on the basketball court doesn't mean you're still not a good general manager of the basketball team. Just don't. And I don't know when or if this broke down where his ability, can he sit behind the Oval Office desk and actually read report after report and make a decision? I'm thinking he's probably reaching a point where he can't do that anymore either. But 6 months ago, maybe he could have, because I've known people that are fine, and all of a sudden they go downhill pretty damn fast. I mean,
well, it's partly the going downhill, assuming he very stubbornly stays in the race, it's not going to get better. It's just going to keep getting progressively worse, and that's, you know, that's a problem, and I think the party has come to grips with that at this point. That it's just this is not getting any better. I think they were hoping they could bluff their way through it and then see what happens. That's out now. I think he's at that stage where he'll have his times when he's lucid, and then he'll have his other times. It's not.
Well, I know some people, Kevin, it's not too many, thank God, but in Audrey's family and in mine, that were absolutely running their business sharp as a tack in April, started to show some signs in July, and by September, couldn't recognize you. I mean, it can happen that fast.
I agree. I understand that.
And I'm not trying to be this guy's guy.
But it hasn't happened that fast with him. Anybody who's been paying attention has seen this, not just for months, but for years.
Well, I mean,
the only difference is it's gotten progressively worse.
What would have happened if instead of being his second term, it was his first term, when Reagan started to slide downhill. Would have been the same thing. Everybody loved the guy, but he wouldn't have been able to function.
Could they have marched him out as a figurehead? I don't know. I don't know if they would have, if they could have. There's a lot there that.
I want to know whose brainchild was an hour and a half, and anybody's been around people like this know that their hours and their routine, as you get older, get very important to you. I mean, unfortunately, right? I'd be perfectly admit to say, I do the show every morning, I prepare for it, I love it. There's people on here, it's challenging, I manage money for people, I talk to clients all day long, I absolutely love it. I don't know that I would set myself up for a cocktail date at 10:30 at night, Kevin. I think I probably wouldn't. Now, what possessed them to give this guy an hour and a half debate starting at 10 o'clock Eastern time when the guy goes to bed at 8:30? I mean, who's that idiot?
Would you consider the possibility that it was a setup, that people who want him off of the ticket thought, well, if he pulls it off, fine, we'll continue, but if he doesn't pull it off, then we've given him the shaft, and we can get on with whoever the next person is.
But the next person's not obvious. That's the problem. It's not like there's somebody behind him that's...
Agreed, but this one's going to lose, and they don't want to lose. So, this is Hail Mary passes at this point. I think they're at a point now when they have to complete about four Hail Mary passes to win the game.
Yeah, there's this has been going. I don't. The idea that you never let any young people come to the top. I don't get that. But maybe Mike Quigley thinks there are, and they just haven't been able to show themselves. And if they get a chance, somebody might actually catch a wave. I mean, just because we don't know that people are there on both sides of the aisle, they might be. If we went out there, Kevin, our first or second or third term, you could be Solomon. How would you ever get a voice? The only guy who got one was when they first started. What was the one? What's the one where they C-SPAN? Where they show like every speech in Congress and something, and Newt Gingrich became a national word because he would give speeches like every other day with nobody in Congress, just so people on TV thought he was somebody, right? Well, he had the balls and the tenacity to do that, and he became basically a national figure only because he gave speeches with nobody in the place. I mean, I don't know. When was the last time you watched C-SPAN? Are they even on?
I'm sure they're on. No, I haven't watched them in God knows how long. I never was much of a C-SPAN watcher.
No, me neither. But I'm saying that I knew that Newt was always talking on there. I mean, you couldn't. All you did is turn it on, and you saw his face because everybody else was what I was supposed to, the bar drinking or playing handball or what. But he was there, and it's amazing how people give speeches in the House of Representatives with five people in the joint, right? I mean, the whole protocol of this Congress, Kevin, I can't figure out. I love when they have the big meetings where they're grilling somebody, and the last person who's talking, the other people have all left. They don't have the respect to wait for the guy. We had to sit there and listen to them. I mean, what's with these people?
They're not high quality people, Tom.
Yeah, I think there are some from some
there
areas.
Are some, but there aren't many. There aren't enough.
Do they not get there, or as soon as they get there, they realize they're not doing anything? Their first tour, 2 years or 4 years, and finally you just say to hell with this and go back and do something else. I think a lot get there and a lot. I went to a, you know what APAC is, right?
Yeah.
What is the American Israeli Political Action Committee or something like that? These guys are real serious lobbyists. It's obviously a Jewish place. And somebody bought a table 2 years in a row and dragged me with. And I sat there, but you know what, Kevin? You learn something everywhere. There was a guy came up and he gave a speech. He was the head of the APAC group. And he said, this is 15 years ago, and he says, you know, you listen on TV and you listen to the pundits and you listen to all the political people and think they know what the hell they're talking about, and they don't. He says, they say there's no turnover in Congress, everybody's there forever. He goes, I got something to tell you. Every time somebody comes into Congress, we offer them a trip to Israel and show them the Golan Heights and show them how close everybody is. And, you know, it's one thing to live in Chicago when you're, 1,500 miles in an ocean away from trouble, but Israel, it's different. He goes, I got news for you. There's more turnover in Congress than there's ever been. Because there's a one here in Illinois, the last 8 years we've taken four different people. So this idea that nobody ever leaves, he goes, I don't know why they're leaving, but they're leaving. He goes, the turnover is incredible.
Well, and we talked about this and speculated what that might be. I think you get some people who go in there and they're just totally, disillusioned by it, and so they're out of there. And you get other people who, kind of become part of the system. And once you become part of the system, you're co-opted.
Well, you and I are used to doing stuff every day and running our own stuff. I can't imagine what I'd do there the first 2 years at the horse goes over the fence last seat in the two committees I managed to get myself in. What do I do all day? I guess, you and I would probably try and find where everybody else is, whether it's a bar or a health club or something, and try and talk to as many people as we possibly can and try and not make a name for ourselves, but at least let it be known that we're there to do something. Now, how rewarding that is, I don't know, or will they even let you in or not, I would have no idea until we tried it, right?
Yeah, look, there is a whole process to being in a leadership role, leadership itself is work. Forget the policy stuff, forget the staff and all of that. Leadership is it's a job unto itself. And I think people lose touch because they don't recognize that. They don't have the skill set to do it.
Well, that's why we'll dash on this one, because he wants to come back on again, because I saw him at the veterans thing, Mayor of Orland Park. What I asked him, I think, Kevin, I forget what his answer was. What's his name? Keith Peacow, I think it is. I said, Keith, you're a 45-year-old guy that's been a mayor. You've had a business. You've had a military career. You've already been kind of, if not the lead dog in the pack, pretty far in front. I said, what the hell are you going to do the first 2 years in Congress? And he goes, I'm not going there to be the end of the bench. I'm telling you that right now. But how does somebody like that at that age pile into the House of Representatives? How does he make a name? Just by force of personality and talent? I guess that somebody might rise to the top. Mike Quigley has, pretty much.
Yeah, well, first of all, you speak up.
Yeah.
That becomes a big part of the job. And, you have to develop all kinds of personal relationships outside of the formal channels.
Yep.
I'll just give you an example, and it's just a silly example, but my office is in Elkhart. I was in South Bend yesterday. I'm in South Bend once a week, every Thursday, and I had a lot to do yesterday, but one of the things that I did not leave out of the equation was taking a walk around, going through where all the advisors sit, saying hello to everybody, seeing, what's news, what have you been up to. These are people I will have to work with eventually, and I'm not being cynical about it. I generally enjoy them all and like speaking, and then I go down to where, the vice chancellors sit and say hello to people there and see what's up on there in their world. And if I get time, I walk into other, other colleges, the liberal arts people, or go see my friends in the ag side of the house or something. That's really the chore. It's something you have to make time to do. But as you develop those relationships, then that's how you make yourself an effective person.
I think you need to talk to Lou, and your new contract should have a driver and a limo.
That would be fine.
If you got to pick your own driver.
That would probably double the expense of having me if you knew what community college teachers
probably. On that note, bud, take care of yourself. Have a nice weekend. We should have some nice weather, eh? SP Futures up 6.
Looks like it's going to be
great. SP Futures up 6. The NASDAQ Futures up 35. We'll be real quick break with Mr. Carl and talk about this outage. I hope he's not delayed over in Australia. Delayed. I'm looking at the board. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stack. 888-76-JAX. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stacksandjax@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jax. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 8 and the SP is up 44. We're trying to rev up here to make a decent Friday after the last two crummy days. We do have CrowdStrike now, still down 36. It was down 41. These guys hit some problems. We're gonna get to Carl, and he's gonna. Carl, you explain this instead of me. What's going on here? They had the problem first, then Microsoft, then them again, or what's the rotation here?
Okay, so what appears to have happened, from what I've been able to dig into, and I woke up to this early this morning. Fortunately, I was getting up early because I'm on the air on Fridays. So I haven't done a complete deep dive into it, but it's pretty obvious what occurred. So CrowdStrike, as most, well, I don't know how many people actually know what they do, but their primary job is essentially putting a front end between the internet and some web server, for example, that, you know, you log in to do a trade on Schwab or Fidelity or whatever have you. There's always people trying to break into anything on the internet. I mean, I got people trying to break into my stuff at the house all the time. And
girl, so the SIBO used to average like 5 or 6 attempted breaks a week, and that was 1997.
Oh, I get 5 or 6 attempted breaks an hour.
Really? Oh, okay.
On my personal infrastructure. Okay. and hundreds of attempts on my blog.
Why? Right. Just because you're out there and people go after anything that's out there?
Well, they know who I've been a loudmouth on IT for all the way back to the 1990s. So I mean, and I've held my own personal domain and stuff for a very long time. So I guess they think there's something juicy over here, going after the archives of my writings or something. I don't know, but it's. I also have some feeler systems out around the internet. Some of them I pay for, some of them are provided gratis. And those are just there to kind of monitor what's going on, because having having an idea that somebody's after infrastructure in a general sense is sometimes useful. You get a little bit of advance notice. And I used to do a lot of it when I was involved in doing a lot more contract work, because having those sensors, if you will, becomes more useful if you're doing work for other people. So, but CrowdStrike is a little unique in that what they've the way this used to be done, like you probably remember the company Barracuda Networks.
I heard it.
Yeah, you've at least heard the name, because they used to run ads all the time. They gave you a box that you stuck in the middle between the internet and your infrastructure that did this job. CrowdStrike has gone a little further, and they're mostly a software company, because software is a service these days. You don't actually have to have any separated hardware, right? I mean, it's a service now. Adobe revokes. Oh, gee, you didn't pay your subscription, therefore you can't get at all your photos that you've been editing for the last 27 years. nice and ought to be illegal kind of thing. But you know, we don't worry about things like illegal tying arrangements that have been against the law for over 100 years. We don't do that anymore.
No.
So
we don't even know what it is, much less.
No, we don't even do it. You know, this is come on, man. You're just this old curmudgeon. Get out of here. All right. So, but the software as a service model essentially allows you to turn around and say, okay, you know, here's this piece of code that you load on your box. And the problem with this is that in order to do this job, this software has to run with privileges. Okay, so it's not just like an application. It's not like a word processor. Okay, it has to be in the, it has to have access inside the operating system, because what it's looking at is all the data traffic that's coming in over the network cable. And in order to do that, because it's not specific to you, it has to have operating privileges, has to have the system privilege within that environment. So it's running as a driver, basically. It becomes part of the operating system. These guys put out an update that had somebody who was not competent, obviously, by the results. Okay, so I'll credit this one to Homer Simpson in the nuke plant. You know, I've been talking about this for how long now? You know, DIE and all this. Okay, so they put this thing out, and it causes the machines to panic because the software's got a flaw in it. It's got a bug. Probably a bad pointer reference, which is usually what these things are. Pointer is just a piece of it, points to a piece of information. Well, if it points to nowhere,
I think that's what the guy said. It was something about a pointer reference. He knows your lingo.
Right. It's a dereference. What probably happened is it tried to dereference a null pointer, something that had been released, memory that had been released. And when that happens, the program that causes that is terminated because what it's trying to point at doesn't exist. If that happens to be the operating system, it crashes. Right? Machine crashes. The program doesn't crash. The machine crashes.
The blue screen of death.
So you get the blue screen of death. Right. Now, the obvious stupidity here is that this thing gets pushed out to, you know, God knows how many computers on an automated basis. People didn't take the manual decision to install this. It went in on an automated type of thing. And all of a sudden you get up, you know, you come to work in the morning and you got a blue screen on your, you know, on your desktop. And because these guys, you know, this is what monopolist practices get you over time. You become wildly dependent on one vendor. And, you know, half the damned world is using CloudStrike for their IT security. Well, guess what? That means that, you know, your trading desk, your airline, your, you know, whatever, all of them are dead at once, right? Because the screw-up got pushed everywhere.
Well, how big, you know, Matty Weber's, the firm he used to work for until they got bought by somebody and it kind of changed, but they were big in the area of restaurants, American Express. They were into, what he used to tell me, remember when you went into a bar, or a restaurant, and they had the little credit card reader that was tied into the copper line coming from the phone company?
Yeah.
He said, well, that thing was idiot-proof. You couldn't hack it. He said, but the minute you want the cash register that takes the credit card right there, or you scan it on the waiter walking the thing around, he goes, now you need all these protections, all these systems, all this stuff, and you need, like, these guys. How separate is that, what like those guys did, from what is it all sort of the same, just different industries, or is it all totally different?
Well, kind of. I mean, so the argument for, you know, a company like CrowdStrike, as opposed to doing it yourself.
The reason why I asked you that, Carl, sorry, is that Kevin just texted in that at Better World Books, they would average like 8,000 a day, you know, for people wanting in there, because everybody wanted everybody's credit card number, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, yeah. And there are formal standards when it comes to credit card processing. It's called PCI. And they're kind of, the banks are pretty serious about compliance with that, because, you know, obviously if the database gets stolen that has card numbers, I mean, you're not supposed to store unencrypted card numbers ever, period. End of conversation. Okay. That, under no circumstances is that allowed. And so.
What do you mean by unencrypted?
Well, so this is one of the bugaboos, is that The safest thing for a merchant to do is never to store the number at all. Take it from the customer, use it, and throw it in the trash. Right? In other words, you don't keep it. Of course, all the large online merchants do keep it. Okay, Amazon has your card number on file, which is why you don't have to type it in every time you want to buy something. And everybody likes that because you want to be frictionless, right? I mean, that's the idea. But that data... God forbid if somebody can grab that database, right? If you got the, you know, when I was running MCS, you know, you have 10,000 individual customers. Well, guess what that means, right? I mean, if you manage to steal that, you've got 10,000 credit card numbers and they're all valid. And by the way, because we took the charge, you know, we didn't have the charge plate in front of us, we've got that 3-digit code too, which is the magic.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How do you, they store the expiration date and the code on the back too?
Well, you're not, see, this is the thing. You're not supposed to, there are cases in which you can, okay? But the standards specify the level of security and the checks and balances that are supposed to be there. And you are subject to audit on this. They are deadly serious about it. If you get caught doing something that is in violation of those standards, they'll yank your merchant account. Because, you know, obviously if it gets stolen, it's not just one bank that has a problem. It's all of them that, you know,
well, I'm not a big
customers.
I buy some stuff online. Like I guess you're ending up pretty hard not to these days.
Right.
But I probably, you know, maybe I deal with 4 or 5 people. I'm going to say 2 of them keep my card number and 2 of them don't.
Well, an awful lot of, so there's 2 different levels of this kind of security, if you will. 2 sets of standards, one for places that have your card number but do not have the 3-digit code, do not have the CVV, and they do not store it. And those are online merchants. And you'll know if you have one of those situations because every time you go to buy something, you have to put that code in. Okay? Then you have places that are generally much larger, you know, like Amazon, Walmart, etc., that... You don't have to do that, okay? Once you sign in with your password, whatever have you, they have all of it, okay? Now, I mean, as a merchant, that second level is a whole lot more. I mean, there's a lot of risk there for them because the PC, like I said, PCI compliance is serious business. It was a big deal in the 90s, and it's worse now because, of course, you know, the threat profile is much larger. But this is something entirely different because these guys are not just about penetrations into systems. They're also about attempting to prevent denial of service attacks. There's essentially what ends up happening is that these guys get a bunch of robot machines. They get control of people's computers and they swarm traffic onto your site that isn't intended to actually do anything. It's just intended to overload it and screw it up. Okay, and they knock you offline. They don't do any damage to your infrastructure per se, but they make it impossible for your customers to use your stuff.
Well, I use the one from the show instead of giving, you know, credit card or anything. We go out so people can listen to the show. I pay an outfit called SecureNet. So when we do the show here, we go to them and we actually go to their. They store it, and if somebody goes in later to listen,
right.
That's where it is. Well. I just get the bill every month, and it's like $50, and they'll say, pay your bill, use your regular credit card, and I hit yes, and it's gone. So those guys obviously have everything there, correct?
Well, yeah. Now, if you had to give them the CVV once,
I'm sure.
Right, then they kept it because that's how they're doing it. It is a card not present transaction, and in order to be able to do a card not present transaction, you got to have that code. Okay, and nowadays, for the most part, swipes are actually disallowed by the PCI standards unless the customer has attempted to use the chip read some number of times and it's failed. So, you know, like if you go to a Walmart and you stick your card in the terminal and it, right? And it does that a couple of times, then it will let you swipe it. But that's because the PCI standards have been changed, and the reason is that mag stripes are easily cloned, And, you know, they're very easy to read, very easy to duplicate. And therefore, you know, they become a huge problem. You go to get gas and somebody's put a skimmer on the, you know, on the card reader, all right, which is just another magnetic pickup. And they're real small. They're hard to spot if you don't know what you're looking for.
How did these guys fix the chips? I mean, I had no...
The chips are almost impossible to hack.
Well, when chips first came along, how many years ago is this? 10? I got two credit cards. I got American Express. I'm not a Mr. Credit Card guy. I got three of them in probably 2 or 3 months. All three within a month said, destroy your card. The chip has been hacked. And they sent me a new one. Obviously, they've improved on the chips.
Yeah, that's... Well, so essentially the chip contains a seed key, an encryption key. And so when you stick the card in the terminal, it generates a one-time challenge from the terminal to the card. The card comes back with a response. The issuer of the card knows what that seed key is in your card. And so the only way for you to be able to do that, you can't read out the original seed key that was put into that card when it was manufactured. You can issue challenges to it and get responses, but there isn't any way to extract that the original information, so you can't clone it. And the result of that is that it is quite secure. Now, there were similar issues with being able to break them with SIM cards in phones. There were a couple of times that all of a sudden you get this notice from your phone company, hey, go down to the store and we'll give you a new one. All right? No, that's not because they just put new towers up or anything like that. It's because they screwed up in some way and somebody figured out how to break the encryption on the SIM card. And if they can do that, then they can appear to be your phone, okay, even though it's not. So there were a couple of rounds of that because there was some manufacturing issues with those. I haven't had that happen in probably 15 years.
Well, you
know,
do you need the, when I got my passport, you get the little card with the passport?
Yeah.
Well, they said make sure you keep it in this metal little, well, it's a little folder, but evidently it's got metal fibers in there.
Right, that's got a proximity read capacity in the card, but that's not. But you can't tamper with it. It's just that somebody can figure out who that blank you are if they can read.
So the wallets were there's wallets that had that and the entire wallet. You don't need those anymore.
Well, actually, I have one of those wallets. I mean, is it possible for somebody to skim the data? Well, yeah, but the thing is, it's only useful for trying to let's say you wanted to charge, you want to try to steal $100 from me from my Discover card, okay? If you could get close enough to my wallet, and I don't have one that blocks the RF, I mean, now literally, you'd almost have to kiss me, all right? But you know, if you could get a reader, you know, 3 inches from my wallet, which is in my pocket, yeah, theoretically, anyway, you could. At that instant in time. Now, you can't capture it and use it later. That's worthless.
Okay.
It's only good once, okay? But could you do that and theoretically charge something on my card that's in my wallet that way? Yeah, you could. Yeah, you could.
Was that why Maddie says, like, with the... I don't have hardly any apps, but one I do have in Chicago, charging a park everywhere. I have the parking meter app. And I said, man, I don't want these guys having all that information. Not that I care where I park. He goes, no, Chief, do not put your credit card in one of those things on the sidewalk. Get that app. So you don't want your credit card going in there.
Well, that's because somebody could have a skimmer in there. Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you know, if you look, you could... They are detectable if you look somewhat closely. There's a, you know, there has to be some way that...
Well, that's why they put them in bars. People aren't looking that close.
People aren't paying attention. That's right. So, you know, but, I mean, like my phone has a near-field reader. Okay, most modern phones do. If I take my phone and I put it on top of a credit card that has a chip in it, that has the near field capability, it will bing and say, hey, you know, I detected something. What am I supposed to do with this? Because it doesn't know what to do with the coding that it gets, but it knows that it's there. Now, my wallet that I have is RF block because it's got metal fibers, you know, woven into the leather. If I put my phone on top of my wallet, nothing happens because there's, you know, the read doesn't work.
All right, well, let's we got a few, what do you make of I'm going to shift, not necessarily to politics here, but I want to, as we're going to see all kinds of different, when they ever get a candidate on the Democratic side, we're going to see people, you know, flat-ass lying. You know, we're going to have, we're going to have Trump talking about how Biden created the inflation when he sort of did. Biden kept it going. We're going to have Janet Yellen bemoaning what's going on with the dollar when she's the one who caused it.
Right.
We're gonna see all this mess. But I don't see. I mean, I really don't understand how the Republican VP candidate can talk about lowering taxes. Has he ever looked at the budget? I mean, I don't think any of these guys have any of the flexibility to do anything going forward here. That I don't, unless there's something they're going to pull a rabbit out of their hat. I mean, when you're spending, you know, a dollar and you're taking in 60 cents, I don't, where exactly is your flexibility? I don't see it.
Well, you have to stop spending the dollar.
Well, okay, but neither side's going to do that. And one guy wants to lower the taxes.
Well, they're going to have to. Well, they're going to, Chief. Okay, so you know what happens if they don't.
That's my point. I mean, what else can they do?
Well, no, but you know what happens if they don't. Okay,
yeah.
Which is that you're going to see a massive curve steepening happen. All right. Regardless of what the Fed wants, regardless of what Jerome Powell says he's going to do, regardless of what anybody says they're going to do, the markets are not going to sit there and allow this, all right, on an indefinite forward basis. Now, you know, I mean, can you BS people for some period? Of course you can BS people for some period of time. I mean, you know, it's been going on now. For how long has the curve been wildly inverted at this point?
You and I would have never thought they made it this far, yet they have. Somehow.
You know what? The longest time in history, okay? Yeah. I mean, it truly is. At least as far back as any of my data goes, which, you know, all the way back to the 1930s, for crying out loud. So, yeah, I mean, it has gone on for a very long time. However, that which cannot go on forever won't. And at some point, this is going to revert. And when it does, you are going to see a massive dislocation in the markets. And I don't know exactly when it's coming, but my suspicion, now that we have, you know, now that the pressure on the Democrat side has gotten to truly extreme levels, I suspect that sometime before Monday, you're going to hear that Biden's out.
And, I would agree.
And I think that the COVID thing is just the excuse for him to kind of, go back in his closet and you know, him and his wife and a handful of other people, get out of the public eye and talk about this and let it go. But the thing that I have seen, look, I had two family members that did the slow burn thing, and I've had several other people, and I have someone else in my family who's a nurse, and she's seen hundreds, if not thousands, of people go through this mental decline thing. All right, and I can tell you exactly how this happens in what you've seen with Biden and some of the things he said. When the neural connections in your head start to break, you hallucinate things. You could not give Joe right now a set of car keys and say, hey, you know, go get a six pack of beer down at the corner store. It would be unsafe for him to do that. And it's not that he's crazy. It's that he will, you hallucinate things, but you hallucinate things based upon memories that you actually have. So, you know, he several times has said that his son was killed in combat. Okay, well, he wasn't. He died of cancer. Why does he say that? Because he remembers his son. He's in a context where war is on the table, like Normandy, all right? But the mental connection between how he passed and his son is broken because that part of his brain is deteriorating. So he confabulates that, not because he's trying to lie, all right? Now, the problem with this is you're driving down the street and all of a sudden he sees his dead son in front of the car. All right, and he slams on the brakes because he thinks he's about to run him over. All right, he's not, but that's what he thinks, and he causes a huge accident. All right, and this is the process as your brain deteriorates. This is what happens. Okay, you're not trying to deceive people. It's just literally pieces of the connections that have been built over your entire life. They start disintegrating. And so, but this is really dangerous, Chief, when you start talking about somebody that's in a command position, right? Because bad things can happen.
I know for me, I mean, I'm not 35, but I think I'm doing fine. But I'll notice, like, if I think it's because like this morning, I didn't forget anything this morning, but it is possible that if all of a sudden I look at the computer before I leave the house and I see this thing about this, you know, worldwide glitch, all I'm thinking about is, what am I going to ask Kevin? What am I going to ask Carl? How can I get the listeners to see some kind of an idea in myself as to what's going on? And by the way, I got two people on this today that are about the best I've got. And now, I could leave my car keys on the counter and say, and be pissed off, hey, you idiot, go back and get them. I don't think that's what you're talking about. I think you're talking about something way different than that.
I am, and that's the thing, is that so what ends up happening is that is if you have this kind of a neurodegenerative condition, you, as it progresses, you start to hallucinate. It's not that you don't remember where something is. People forget. I mean, you know, there's this compartmentalization that happens in your brain. Your short-term memory and your long-term memory are kind of different in the way that they work. And your short-term memory gets integrated into your long-term over time, but only parts of it, which is why you don't know, you know, you don't remember where you put your car keys. That's not a symptom of, you know, hey, guess what? You got Parkinson's, jackass.
Well, boy, I know my uncle Carl, I don't know why he ended up getting it. Most of the people in my family are 95 and they're fine. A couple.
You don't know. I mean, it's
is it
there's
is it brought upon a lot of these guys worked in these factories and stuff, where all these incredible chemicals around that now if you had any in the street you'd evacuate the area. Do you think some of that? What I'm saying is I'm agreeing with you in the sense that
I think some of it's environmental. Yeah, but you know what, Chief? I grew up where there was a chemical plant that was, you know, a few miles from the house. And every time you drove by it, which we did all the time, because if you wanted to go anywhere, you had to, right? Your eyes would water. It was so bad, all right? And you couldn't eat the fish in the local canal because, you know, they were full of toxins. The water looked like, you know, looked like sludge. It was. And you know what? We cleaned all that stuff up, but I grew up with this.
Yeah, a lot of people. But, I mean, just we got to go to break, but you could, if he remembered who you were, you could have a long conversation of when he and his buddy used to run booze from Detroit to Chicago along Route 12. He remembered all that stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, ask him what he had for breakfast and no idea.
He has no idea.
And it's kind of, when it's, hopefully we, you know, boy, I tell you what, that if the big guy upstairs gave me one disease to cure, I don't know which one I'd cure. So many of them. It'd be one of them. Autism would be one of them. Cancer would be one of them. I don't know which one I'd pick first. S&P Futures up 75 cents in the NASDAQ futures up 14. Come back, we're going to talk about what's going on with these markets, interest rates. Carl opened up the subject about interest rates, long-term, short-term, and how it's been like this for like a long time, but it's really not normal. Historically normal. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, Rope, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ futures up 25. We were down a little bit when we came in. I'd say if I was on TV, market is looking for direction. whatever the hell that means. We still have CrowdStrike now, and it's low. We've got it down 43. That's 12% because they're part of this worldwide snafu in the and scheduling. It's most felt, it appears, to be in Australian places where they have problems with airlines, all delayed and everything like that. But it's kind of everywhere, I think, because it's in, somehow turned, got its way into some of the Microsoft stuff. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei down 62 points. Call that flat. Not much going on there. Still over 40,000, 40,063. We have the Hang Seng down 360, another 2%, 17,417. Shanghai up 5. Russell was talking on Wednesday and yesterday about, he thinks these guys, asked Carl about this too, talk about having debt issues. I mean, how are those guys holding it together? But somehow they, I guess they are. DAX down 123. These guys are sinking a little bit here, more than before. That's 0.7%. Or is 0.5. FTSE down 43.5. Kick around down 47.60. The sell-off has worsened a little bit over there, but not horrible. Yesterday, we had the Dow down 533. Almost a Fibonacci replacement of the 750. They were up the day before. S&P down was down 43. NASDAQ down 125. So not a good day yesterday, making that two in a row on the bad days, at least for stuff other than the Dow. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.23. The Bund up 5 basis points, 2.46. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.04. Oil down 13 cents, hugging the top end of this range here, 82.69. Brent down 6 cents, 85.05. Natural gas down 5 cents, 207. RBOB unchanged, 251. Gold down 46 bucks, still holding above 2,400. 2,410, we'll see if that hangs, if they have a hangover of 2,400. Silver down 98 cents, 29.24. Dollar strengthened here a little bit. It had been weak, and now it's coming back just a hair. That's what's causing this. Copper down 2 cents, 4.25. FX, dollar is back to 108.8. The euro was over 109 there for a while. British pound almost made it over 130. Now it's 129.1. So that's what you're seeing in the gold prices, all kind of tied together. Crypto, Bitcoin up 625, 64,173. Carter, what do you got for us, Trevor? Weather, sports? Hardly any sports, no sports.
Morning, Chief. You're right, hardly any sports today. All the cups are done, even internationally. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago, 63 degrees right now with a high of 76. Mostly sunny and comfortable. Tonight will be clear with a low of 64 degrees. Over to Phoenix, 92 degrees right now with a high of 114. Hot with intervals of clouds and sunshine, danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. Otherwise, tonight a thunderstorm in spots early this evening, partly cloudy and very, very warm. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, you got 18 minutes. You're looking at 33 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 16 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Lastly, baseball. Let's talk about some baseball. No games yesterday, but today we got a couple, though. Cubs played the Diamondbacks in Wrigley Field, Chicago at 1:20 p.m. And the White Sox played the Royals in Kauffman Stadium, Kansas City at 7:10 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Carl, the weather, I was talking to one of my judge buddies the other night, and he said his sister is in Las Vegas, and evidently it got so hot out there, and a lot of the sidewalks there are asphalt, they're not concrete, because they get hotter, and, well, concrete gets pretty hot, but the asphalt gets worse because it's darker.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And I guess she when she stepped the concrete onto the asphalt, her, like, shoe stuck, and she falls and lands on her forearm. She's got asphalt burns on her forearm, like if she was, like, tarred and feathered, for God's sake.
You know, all right, so, you know, everybody says how unprecedented this is. When Sarah was much younger, my daughter, we were headed up north, and it was in the middle of summer, and we went through a part of Kentucky when we were having one of these crazy heat waves, like, you know, like we get, like, in summer sometimes, right? I get out of the car to put gas in the car. My shoes stuck to the asphalt. That was, you know, right there at the gas station. Didn't have a canopy. It was out in the full sun.
Wow.
It was about 2 in the afternoon, right? Middle of, yeah, I mean, the AC in the car had been blasting away. I didn't realize exactly how stupid it was outside. It was the Jetta, which doesn't have a thermometer on the dash, right? It had to be 120. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Don't fall down.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I was like, that could be really bad.
Well, they were saying that the biggest emergency room thing was people burned feet.
Yeah, I can believe it. I mean, if, you know, it's the Blacktop, it's kind of funny because, you know, you hear all this all the time about how unprecedented and, you know, this, that, the other thing. Well, I have a thermometer, computer, connected that's on my front porch, and its purpose is actually to change over from heat pump to natural gas to manage that stuff, and also to set the thermostat mode between heat and cool and things like this, right? Well, it records every 20 minutes. And so I have records. And interestingly enough, every day when it's sunny, as the sun goes down, the sun will hit the concrete of the porch. The thermometer that is reading that is about 6 feet above that, because that's where it's fastened. And all of a sudden, at 6 o'clock at night, the temperature goes up on a fairly steady basis, starts rising, and goes up about 4 degrees. Okay. Now, anybody that believes that late in the day, the temperature consistently goes up by 4 degrees has rocks in their head. Okay. That's not what really happened. What really happened is the concrete got hot and it radiated the heat, and the hot air changes the temperature reading, right? But yeah, I mean, blacktop in particular is nasty in that regard because, of course, it's black. So it's a black body. It absorbs more of it. And we have all of our roads in the subdivision here are blacktop as opposed to cement. And so, yeah, we get it, when we get these heat waves. But the pattern has shifted, and it appears that this is durable. The crazy heat that we've had in your area and down here appears to have broken. And there was a front that came through, and it looks like that pattern shift is going to be fairly persistent.
It's beautiful here today.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a couple of day thing. I think that's we may have seen the stupid for the summer here, because that pattern shift does look like it's going to be durable. Just looking at the upper air and stuff, I could be wrong about that.
Well, we got La Nina, so we're going to be cooler.
Well, that's right. I'm saying it takes time for those things to work their way through because the planet is pretty effing big, right? But, here's that. By the way, on your thing that you were talking about in the first hour, all federal judges, if you want to put term limits on that, you need a constitutional amendment. It's Article 3, Section 1. The remedy for a judge or a justice who is doing something untoward is impeachment. And, in fact, historically speaking, the most common office to be impeached in the history of the United States is a federal judge.
Usually like appeals court people and stuff that kind of go off the deep end, right?
Well, but all federal judges by the Constitution are appointed for life. And the actual clause is that they are to serve during shall hold their office during good behavior. So that's the remedy is that you impeach judges or justices that are not behaving well. And impeachment is a political process. You don't have to prove a crime. You just have to prove that they are not engaged in good behavior.
Okay, then. You had a friend, more than one friend. The guy that you helped go to the House of Representatives, and then after a couple of terms, he wanted out.
He got thrown out.
Oh, all right. Well, Kevin and I were kind of talking about what do you run into your first year? Can you accomplish? Because Keith Peacock was on. He did not win. He came real close in a place that mostly Democrat, so he did real well. He did a nice job as mayor of Orleans. Good guy. I mean, he's a kind of ran a business, did a nice job in Orleans, was an Army vet, the whole resume. And but he's, I hope I'm not making him older than he is. I'm going to say he's 45 to 50. And I'm thinking, when I was that age, would I want, that seems like a job where in House of Representatives, you want to be like 30 or 35. But, how long is, without me speculating, what did your buddy run into when he got there? Could he accomplish anything, or was it a total pain in the ass?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll tell you the part of it I know, which is not all of it by any stretch of the imagination. But from it, it ought to be rather clear exactly what sort of level of depravity and corruption we're dealing with at the federal level. And I know some people that have been in state office, and I have very good reason to believe that it's at least that bad and maybe worse. Okay. He wanted to have, after he won, a internal system within his office for his staff and he himself to put together policy papers and correspondence, and not for external consumption, okay, not official records, but personal work product, deliberative product within his office, okay? You'd think that that would be something that anybody would want to do, right? I mean, you want to have deliberations within your office, not with external stuff, okay? So I said, look, I like you. I ran some ads for him, and you know, we had to issue pro forma invoices for what that would have been, because that's a campaign contribution. It's an in-kind contribution, but it's a campaign contribution. And so, you know, and I used to be treasurer for, I did that job for a Libertarian congressional candidate, so I know what the laws are.
So you had to send him an invoice saying that the ad cost $500 and that was considered a donation by you.
That's right, even though he didn't actually pay $500.
Right, okay.
That's what its market value was, okay? So yeah, so I had to send him, every quarter I had to send him pro forma invoices for the value of the advertising. You know, if you came to me as Joe Blow and wanted that spot, that's what I'd charge you, okay? So that's how this stuff works. You have to comply with these rules. But after he wins, I told him, I said, look, I will drive out there to D.C. And we'll just grab a random PC that you have, and I'll set this stuff up for you. I'm not going to charge you anything for it. I'll just do it. And it'll be entirely 100% secure, but I cannot connect it to anything internal within, the official parts of the house infrastructure and stuff. I said, that I can't do. I said, there are rules around what the government can do, okay? And I'm not playing in that snake pit. I said, but completely within your own stuff, yeah, I mean, you're a congressman, but you're still a U.S. citizen. Hello. All right, so he shows up for
orientation. So this computer is going to be for the stuff those guys do in the office, and it doesn't even go to the internet, doesn't do anything.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
So he shows up on...
I'm not a layman here, so I'm just trying to get everybody to understand what we're doing here.
So he shows up for orientation before this happens. He's, because that's what you do, right? You're newly elected, you have to show up for freshman orientation. So he shows up for orientation. The first thing that the Republican caucus tells him is hand over your cell phone. Right now.
You gotta be kidding me.
He says, what? No, they were dead serious. Hand over your cell phone. Here is your new cell phone. It is rigged so that absolutely everything you do goes through us. And by the way, absolutely no IT infrastructure of any kind will be done except by our staff. Period. And he's like, you can't do that. And I said, well, you're right. Legally, we can't force you to do that. But if you don't go along with it, you get no committee assignments.
Well, why doesn't he get their cell phone and go out and buy himself a jitterbug and nobody knows about?
Well, because if he gets caught, he loses all of his committee assignments.
That's a little harsh.
Well, that's the way the machine works in D.C.
Are the Democrats the same way?
Yep. By the way, how do you think the Democrats had a literal mole that ended up in one of the high office IT positions and was siphoning off information? I don't remember the guy's name. Amon or something like this. That got caught. Okay? And they knew, the DISA people knew this guy was a problem. And he's working, I think it was in Wasserman's office, was working in there and exfiltrating information.
Well, it seems like they're set up to for somebody to do that.
Well, gee, it does look like that.
Even I know that.
That's not too very hard to figure out, is it, Chief? But this is, yeah, the you want to talk about a snake pit, okay? I mean, you only think the trading floor is bad. Oh, by the way, you speaking of trading and corruption and crazy things, you heard about this place out of Texas that supposedly had, huge number of put contracts on DJT.
Oh, yeah, and I heard that somebody did. I didn't know who it was.
Well, so there's this conspiracy theory.
But we're talking about a stock that makes no dough and it's trading way high. So I mean,
right, but again, we're talking about, you know, supposedly this is like a 9/11 type thing, right, where there were a bunch of puts put out on it just before, you know, somebody takes a shot at Trump. And the funny
thing
about it is...
They didn't do too well on those puts.
That didn't work out, did it? So, but then here's the interesting thing. They come out and say the filing was an error. It was really, you know, it was a client of ours, but it was like 20 contracts. It wasn't like 20,000 contracts, right?
Well, anybody should be able to check that at time of sales.
So my immediate question is this. When this whole thing blows up in social media and everything, guess what? If it was 20 contracts or if it was 20,000 contracts, somebody's on the other side of the contract, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the exchange knows how many contracts actually traded hands.
Oh, without a doubt. You could get it, I don't know how to do it, but I know my brother can get it, time and sales.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what we're trading for. You get it in a second.
Well, yes. So I'm like, why is this flying around all over the place? Why, if in fact this was an erroneous filing, this is a 10-second thing for somebody to say, you know what, there was no 20,000 contract trade. Okay, it didn't happen.
Well, you could also look at the open interest. If the 20,000 contract trade and the open interest is 10, how could it be a 20,000 contract trade?
I'm just saying. There's, you know, it's like, all you got to do is look at this and go, is this real or is this Memorex, right? So this is, but this is the kind of crazy stuff that, the crazy conspiracy stuff that's flying around on all of this is off the rack. And what I am convinced that the whole reason that this is, that all of this is happening is because nobody wants to deal with the truth, which is what we just saw happen with CrowdStrike. I don't think anybody is going to try to argue that the CrowdStrike thing and this outage was some nefarious Russian actor who crashed all these machines. No, CrowdStrike's actually admitted.
Yeah, they said they screwed up.
Well, they put out a bad update, right? Yeah. That crashed all
which
these
happens,
computers.
Happens still a lot. I mean,
it shouldn't happen at all. Okay.
Well, I know when Sebo did an update, they'd want to do it on a Friday night, so they'd all weekend to fix it if they screwed it up, and they were. And even then, they would say we're as careful as we can be. We still can't guarantee everything's gonna be fine.
Well, that's right, but you know, but you do it on a Friday night. Okay, you do it at, you know, or you do it at 3 a.m. in a small place first and see if it works okay and let it run for a couple of days before you go push it globally to, you know, 400 million different computers, for crying out loud. What is wrong with people that they lose something like this, you know, without pretty, I mean, it's one thing if it's going into one company. It's quite another when it's like every airline, every online, you know, web provider. Everybody. Are you crazy? And so, you know, I mean, but it's what it comes down to is we've got rank incompetence that has gone everywhere. It's gotten to the point that we've got the Secret Service, the best police force on a planet, that detailed 5'4 women to be bodyguards for a 6'2 man, and then the screaming that has come out of them about people like me attacking that and saying, "Oh, you're a sexist pig." No, I'm not. If you can find some 6'4 women to be bodyguards, right? That's fine, because the job is to get in front of the protectee if the flag goes up. That's the job.
You know, we were talking the other day, Carl. Boy, I'm glad you brought this up, because I was reading yesterday. Because I mean, you read all this stuff, you know, if your name is true or not. Something about the Secret Service recognized that they didn't have enough local people to cover the outside properly. Now, if they were to go to Trump's people and say, "This is a problem," and Trump's people said, "I'm just saying,
I don't care.
I don't care," then what?
Well, that's look, the president can say, "I'm getting in my personal car and I'm going to get a coffee or a six pack."
Yeah.
Right? And the Secret Service guy says, "You can't do this." He says, "I'm doing it. Have a nice day." All right? They don't have the ability to force you to do. I mean, this is not, you know, this isn't a dictatorship, okay? They don't have the ability to force you to do anything. They do have the ability to say, "Hey, that's a really bad idea," right? And why? But if you tell them to go to hell, I mean, rather famously, after Carter left office, Amy Carter told the Secret Service to go bite it. All right.
Yeah. Well, and Nixon told me he didn't want me more either, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, you have every. I mean, you can do that even if you're while you're in office if you want to. All right.
Well, but what happens not if, in office. If the normal, say, I'm an ex-president and I'm sitting there and I like to watch the Cubs every day and I'm sitting there, I read books and I talk to people and I do, you know, maybe I'll walk down to the saloon for a drink or something, or Nixon would go for a walk in Manhattan. What if one day I say, guess what, I'm going to the Cub game? Well, they're not responsible for shoving four guys just in waiting, and now I want to go to the Cub game, or I want to, you know, take a walk down the lakefront. I mean, they're not, I mean, they don't have four other people just in case I want to do something. I mean, I don't know why I've gotten so curious as to how this works, but manpower is manpower. Do I have to say I want to go to the Cub game tomorrow or next week? And
well, yeah, there's supposed to be a fair bit of planning that, you know, that goes into this. I mean, this site, there is an advanced team. When you're a protectee, there is an advanced team that goes out to these sites and scouts it. They knew that there was a problem with that, you know, with those buildings, because elevated positions are a big deal, and so they knew that was an issue. Okay, now they apparently, from what I've been told, they told the state cops, which are usually the people that are part of the protective detail. You know, it's a top-down kind of structure, right? But the site commander is the one that's in charge of all this. They apparently told the state cops to bugger off and that their only job was to do traffic. And then they've tried to blame this lack of coverage on the state and local law enforcement guys. And those guys have come back, and now there's, oh boy, are they mad, because they're like, no, you told us to F off. Don't give us this crap. You told us our only job was to do traffic and that you were responsible for everything else. And apparently there's documentary evidence.
Carly,
of this,
what you brought up earlier in the show, this is happening all over the place. This, whatever the, I mean, and it doesn't seem like...
Chief, it's Homer Simpson is running your...
You know, when I was in grad school, it was a long time ago, obviously. The thought of people were, if you were of a fledgling analyst, because, you know, we were going to be financial analysts and, you know, coming out of business school, most people, I didn't want to do that, but other people did. The idea was, if I can just get my ideas to upper management, I'm going to find somebody competent there who will, like, listen to me. I mean, that's the way people my age were brought up, that they're in charge of one of these places. What's the Yiddish term? A mensch. There was somebody that actually gave a crap about the people and about the product and about the business, and somebody was somewhat competent. And how many times in history do you see people, I use the term bleeping up, and somebody would experience going, wait a minute, what are you guys doing? If you do that, you know, the ship's going to sink. You got to do it. There's always like somebody who seems like they make the save, you know, and now we seem like we're running out of those kinds of people. That somebody goes, what are you guys doing? I mean, that, you know, it's almost like, I mean, you hear this guy on the roof of where the police were, what do you call it, to get together? That was their building. It's almost like if you and I were a bunch of crooks and they put a, you know, they put a bolo out in our car, we go park in the police parking lot because they're never going to look there. I mean, it's almost
Chief, the level of stupidity that we now know happens. Okay, this isn't speculation anymore because it's all been admitted at this point. This kid came through security with a rangefinder, and they stopped him.
But he never had to go through a metal detector, right? He was outside.
No, he did go through the metal detector with a rangefinder.
Really?
Which is what, and they caught it because, of course, it's metal, and it went off, right? They let him go because, well, that's not a gun. Excuse me, what possible legitimate purpose? And
how did he get the gun in?
Well, that's a good question. The assumption at this point is it was either in the backpack, broken down, which is not very hard to do. I mean, you can reassemble it.
But that thing goes through the metal detector, did it?
Well, no, because that was outside the perimeter.
That's what I said. That was outside the perimeter.
Right. But either that or the gun was hidden on the ground somewhere. Okay, and he wasn't actually carrying it, you know. But the thing is, these guys, they knew an hour before the shooting happened that there was a weirdo running around with a rangefinder, because they caught him with the rangefinder, but they didn't detain him. Then, like 15-20 minutes ahead of time. They know the same weirdo, same guy. They've got an alert out on this guy. Is running around with a backpack on his back outside the security perimeter and acting oddly. All right. Well, what's in the backpack? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me. You don't stop this dude. The whole thing is a goat rodeo. And then you let Trump go up on the stage, knowing that there's a security. You don't know how serious the problem is, but you know there's a problem. Right, and you let him.
Well,
go
that's
up
what I'm
on
saying.
The
why didn't they just say get the hell off the stage? But you know,
but they did. They didn't do it. And you know, that's the thing is that everybody wants to say, well, you know, this is, you know, there's all this dark conspiracy. No, this is rank incompetence. It's this. It's exactly the same thing that just happened with CrowdStrike.
You can blame society. You can blame the educational system. But I just see people normally doing weird stuff. I see people that, you know, I use the term from my generation, couldn't change a tire if their life depended on it. I mean, you see them driving, and not that they're driving erratically, but they miss you by such a little bit that it's obvious they don't have any depth perception. They never played ball. They didn't realize. They know they cut in front of you, but they don't even know how close. I mean, is this, how did we get to this point? How do you trust these people who can't do the simple stuff like park a car to be like a mayor? I'm not saying our guy can't park, but I'm saying how do you get up the chain and expect them to do anything else when the simple stuff you can't do? I don't get it.
Well, you don't. But the thing is that when you take merit off the table as a requirement,
even the fact that anybody would even do that means we're going down the wrong way.
Well, guess what? You have an entire department in virtually every corporation in the country that is their job. It's called human resources. Karen lives there, and you have documents out of places like Deere now that essentially say we're not hiring anybody beyond this salary grade unless they're black or a woman.
Well, we got it, Dale. How do you have Janet Yellen see 40% money come into the
Janet Yellen is
how the hell did this happen to the dollar? Well, duh.
By the way, let's put a diversity hire in as Treasury Secretary. Everything will be fine.
I don't know if she's diversity. I think the firms run her. They gave her $7 million between jobs.
Well, you know what? Okay, so either incompetent or corrupt, take your pick.
The question of the week, I've asked everybody, which would you rather have? I asked my judge buddies the other night. I said, if you had a mayor and he was crooked but smart and he just was taking his piece, versus he didn't even know what the hell was going on, which would you pick? And they go, that's a tough question. I don't know what my ruling would be. he goes, I don't know what my ruling would be on that one. On that note, Carl, have a nice weekend. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 41. We're trying to come back here today. I'm not going to say, if we don't come back today and when we sink again, it's not going to look so hot. But I'm going to say we probably will be up today. We'll see how that works. But could I be right once in my life, Carl?
Chief, we're playing nearer my heart to thee.
Yeah,
and you know what? They're rearranging deck chairs.
Oh no! Well, I hope it's not that. they don't realize that the thing's right there, the iceberg. But it's been there for such a long time. You know, they're going to say we're the ones that are nuts.
We're never going to hit it, right?
Yeah, back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.